Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'm glad you're here. My website is www.jbsba.com. And when you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week by email. And it is, I think you'll like it. I think you'll enjoy it. And if you don't, guess what? You can unsubscribe yourself. That's right. We give you the ability to do that. We have that technology. Well, you don't even have to wait for us to unsubscribe you. You can do it yourself. And it's really easy to do, to subscribe or to unsubscribe. So check that out when you get a chance. And don't forget all the other things you can do there on my site. William Dunkelberg is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. William is the chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business and a professor of economics at Temple University in downtown Philadelphia. He's our good friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's always good to be back.
It's good to have you back, and thanks for joining us, and thanks for bringing your Small Business Economic Trends Report to us, as you do every month. And that's where you poll small business owners across the country every month. You've been doing this now for something under 100 years, and finding out what small business owners are saying about the economy out there where the rubber meets the road. And from what I can tell, Bill, it looks pretty good.
Overall, things are looking really good. The kind of headlines are we've seen the strongest profit growth now since 2000. We've seen the best job creation since 2000.
Wow.
Capital spending is the strongest since 2000. Capital outlays are the highest since 2000. So, and we've really kind of seen the economy now really pick up speed through 2003 and into 2004, and that's good news.
Obviously, you haven't been listening to the Democratic candidates.
Well, they're finding fewer and fewer things to complain about. But,
No. They're finding plenty of things to complain about. The question is you know, are they finding any validity in what they're saying? Because if you listen to those guys, what you just said, it sounds like somebody's wrong. I'll put it that way. One of you guys are wrong.
Yeah, well, it's always a perspective issue, so they can always turn around and say, since our headline is, everything in January was the best since 2000, it's still all lower than 2000. So you can flip it around and say, well, since 2000, or more precisely, since the president took office, we've lost. The stock market's lower since 2000. Total employment is a little bit lower, depending on the measure you use. They use the payroll survey, which I don't think is correct. But
you use the household survey.
Just change the perspective and say, hey, it's not as good as the all-time best, and that's probably true.
Well, let's take these things one at a time from a profit standpoint. I mean, corporate profits are up. Small business profits apparently are up. I mean, that's good for future hiring and for future capital outlays, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right now, if you look at adjusted for inflation, corporate profits are at a record high. Corporate cash flow is at a record high, both in dollars and as a percentage of GDP. So, corporate America, if you will, the profit-earning sector is awash in profits and cash, and that's very good going forward for capital spending and for hiring.
No question about it. And the thing is the capital spending is probably leading the hiring, isn't it, in terms of its appearing on the radar screen?
Well, probably. Sometimes it's easier to go out, especially today with the technology, and it's also small and compact. It's really easier to make capital outlays quickly than it is to find somebody that you want to hire, because job search always takes some time. So we're seeing the capital spending pick up, but the hiring's also picking up.
Well, Bill, another thing that I've been thinking about lately, when I started my career and when you started your career, companies hired employees when they were growing, when they needed to fill out, a growth opportunity, they hired a person, and then they said, okay, what does this person need? They need a calculator, they need a desk, they need a pencil, they need a vehicle or whatever. They hired the person, then they equipped them with technology. Today, it's the reverse of that. today people are saying, okay, I need to grow, so I'm going to buy the technology that allow me to grow, and if that technology can't be performed by the people that I've got existing, then I'll hire somebody to run that technology.
Yeah, a lot of that is going on. You buy a new system, and then you slot people into it.
Right.
Rather than the system around the people you have.
Yeah, you instead of equipping your people with technology, you equip your technology with people. And
exactly.
And I know there are people out there saying, well, you know, that's what's wrong with the world today, you know. But the thing is, the truth is it's the way efficiencies are found.
It's
the way all these profits are being created, isn't it, Bill?
But it works.
Yeah, it does. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. And by the way, folks, the way I just described, that's not big companies. That's little companies. What we were just talking about, they're doing that too. 20 Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood an old cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never left the midnight sun.
We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our good friend Bill Dunkelberg is our guest. He's Chief Economist with the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. And Bill, and we're talking, folks, about the Small Business Economic Trends Report that he conducts every month with small business owners across the country. Bill, I want to come back to this labor thing for just a minute and help people to sort out the truth from the hyperbole, from the truth from the distortions, as they talk to Republicans and or I should say as they listen to Republicans and Democrats who are running for office, whether it be, you know, their own state houses or senates or Congress or the White House. Let's help them by separating the truth by identifying the truth about the job situation. It seems to me, Bill, that there are jobs that have been lost that are never coming back. Those are global shifts. There's very little anybody really can or should do about those. Then there are jobs that have been lost that are just because of the economy, and those are going to come back. And then, you know, then there may be some jobs that have been lost because politicians did the wrong thing. And instead of just saying we've lost 3 million jobs, and, you know, it's somebody's fault, don't we need to really kind of stratify this whole issue and place the blame where it really belongs?
Well, that would probably be helpful or constructive to the debate, but then again, politicians don't want to do that.
But we can
going
make
back
them,
and
we
looking
can,
at
the, we can hold the, them accountable.
You can indeed, and of course, one of the problems we have is, well, what's really happened? And we have those two measures about job growth. One is the payroll survey, which, of course, excludes agriculture, excludes government, and excludes private sector employment. And one of the fastest-growing sectors that we have is individual employment, self-employment.
Right.
And, of course, proprietors' income is doing really well now. So we know all those little teeny businesses are doing very well. So,
like in 89, when I decided I didn't want to look for a job, and I decided to hire myself. I started my own business.
Exactly, and
that's
you don't get counted
about.
On a payroll survey. You're not in somebody's payroll. So,
right.
Even though you're gainfully employed, producing a product people want, because we know that because they pay you for it, you aren't counted in that survey. So that survey shows that, you know, we lost 250,000 jobs through 2003. Then we have the household survey, which is what we use to determine the unemployment rate that we all watch very closely. And that's a sample of 60,000 households. And we find out what the employment status of everybody is in this random sample that represents all of the households in the U.S. And we know precisely what's happening in that sample, but then we have to multiply that by a census number to get the number of jobs for the whole economy. And, of course, in January, census said, oops, 500,000, too many people. So they revised their estimate of the population down by 500,000. So that number is a little squishy itself. So somewhere between payroll surveys loss of 250,000 and the household survey's gain of 1.5 million plus is the right answer, and we don't really know where it is right now.
When about 4 years ago, Bob McTeer, as you know, is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, was on the show, and unemployment was about 4.3%. He declared that to be full employment. Last month, Richard DeKayser, who I think you know is chief economist for the National City Bank, said he believed that in the 21st century, 5% unemployment would be full employment. What do you think?
Well, we all have different measures of full employment and different concepts. We have the NARU, which is the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. I love that. You know, the acronym is pretty terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Basically says what level of unemployment how low can you make unemployment go without overstimulating the economy and causing inflation? And that's probably operationally is the unemployment rate that we want to talk about as being full employment. What we discovered in 2000 was that we got the unemployment rate down to 3.9% for a few months without having any inflation. So then people said, well, maybe we can do that for long periods of time. But that's questionable. So full employment, of somewhere between 4 and 5, or an unemployment rate between 4 and 5 would be one in which, job creation was pretty strong. That is, you would be absorbing all the new workers that came in, and you could hold the unemployment rate steady in that range. We would be pretty happy. But whether it's 5 or 4, well, that's an interesting debate for us academic economists.
When politicians say that we should be protecting American jobs and we should, all these jobs going to China is somebody's fault and we should be holding account, we should be kicking people out of office because of all that, isn't that a case of arrested economic development?
Certainly is. There's no way in a free economy, where people are, can make decisions about where they want to work and what they want to do, that you can sensibly protect jobs. Job protection really means subsidizing workers that are too expensive and produce stuff that's too costly
and are inefficient.
Right, and keeping their jobs. And steel is the classic example.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so if you do that, of course, very long, if the larger, the sector of your economy that you do this, or the higher the level of inefficiency. Job protection, minimum wages, things like that, those are all just taxes on consumers. You're going to make me pay more for my product in order to have it made here in America, and, of course, that means I can spend less elsewhere. It's not good for the economy.
Right. What does your report say about capital spending? That was up too, that wasn't it?
It was. We saw over the past 6 months now, we've seen a noticeable rise in the percentage of firms that are actually reporting that they're making capital outlays. So they're out there buying stuff, and that shows up in the national income accounts. We had a 10% at an annual rate, 10% increase in investment spending in the fourth quarter, and that's very, very good. That's very strong. So that looks good. And then plans
Bill,
to make...
Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break here, folks. We're going to be right back with our good friend Bill Dunkelberg after these messages. It's Tintel. Stay with us. Back, it's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, and we're visiting with our good friend Bill Dunkelberg, who's chief economist for the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business. Don't forget their website, folks, nfib.com, and I encourage you to join that organization to become a member. I've been a member now for, about 12 or 13, 14 years, and a long time, and I plan to continue to join them. I think it's one of the best investments I make in the year's time, especially when it comes to helping to get the government out of the way. And, Bill, when I look at where we are right now with health savings accounts and the direct expensing increases that we've gotten, those are all things that are good for small business, and they're things that people like the NFIB have been working on hard to make happen for a number of years. And, I really believe that my $150 to $200 or whatever I give a year to be a member of the NFIB, I feel like that money helped to create that and to make that happen. And I'm really excited about the direction. I don't like the numbers, but I like the trend, I guess is the best way to say it.
Well, certainly your support of NFIB and NFIB's work in Washington has been very important to looking out for small businesses who just usually get lost in the crowd of money in Washington, D.C. and buying influence. So it's been a great effort. It was started in 1943, and they have a lot of accomplishments since then.
And folks, if an NFIB rep drops by, give them 10 minutes on me. I tell them Jim Blasingame said I'm going to give you 10 minutes, And I think you'll want to be a part of this. Bill, let's move on down and talk about capital spending. That's been good. Well, actually, we need to wrap up that. I think you may have had. Did you have one more thing you want to say about capital spending?
Well, just that we're seeing it across the board. You know, it's amazing how much capital spending the service sector does. Huge amounts, mm-hmm. and they're doing lots of it and spending lots of money there. And of course, that's improving productivity in that sector as well as in manufacturing and distribution. So it's happening everywhere in the economy, and that's good.
What about inventories? Is that building back up?
Yeah, inventories are very lean. We finally have seen some improvements on the inventory side. That is, we've been successful at getting inventories. We've been trying to build inventories now for half a year, but consumer spending has been so strong, as fast as we get it on the shelf, they've been taking it off. Finally, we're building inventories up a little bit. They're very, very lean. Some people think that means that they're going to have to grow a lot, and of course, I don't think so. The new technology allows us to have a lower inventory to sales ratio than we used to have in the olden days. But
higher turns is more profit, isn't it?
Exactly. You don't want that stuff just sitting on the shelf, paying interest to the bank to finance that stuff you've got, you know, on your floor plan.
You don't have to have as many shelves as you used to have. You don't have to have as big a buildings.
Exactly. So that all just means that everybody's still getting, you know, we're getting products more cheaply than we used to, and that's what business and competition are supposed to deliver for us.
Well, the ideal situation is 5% growth and low inventories. That would be ideal, wouldn't it?
That's it. You love that, you know.
Yeah, that's when instead of four turns a year, you're getting 10 turns a year, and Bill, I really believe that one of the best things that's happened to the economy is one of the sleeper issues is just-in-time inventory practices. And that's where, as most people know, it's where you have your inventory available to your customers just in time, not just in case. And I'm convinced, Bill, that that's the single issue that's helped us have two fairly unpainful recessions, the last two that we've had.
Well, that's a very good point. If you don't have overstocking of inventory because you can manage it so well, then you don't have the old inventory cycles that we used to have, like the 1974-5 recession where people built inventories way, 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 way up. And then, of course, when you have too much, you have to stop ordering, sell off the inventory, and that causes a bump in the road that we just don't seem to have anymore.
And that's back when products would last a year or many years, and now products don't last. Maybe they're valid for 90 days, so we sure can't do that. And okay, Bill, we got time for one more issue. If you had to leave us with one thought, inflation, credit, what would be the thing that you would want to make sure that we know about?
Well, I think the thing for 2004 is that clearly the economy is not going to be an issue in the election. We'll have figured everything out by the time we get to the election. So it looks like the only issue is going to be the war in Iraq. And what people forget about that economists should remind them of is that it's not a question of should we spend $100 billion in Iraq. It's how should you spend $100 billion in Iraq? Because before the war, we were spending money every year in containment, keeping Saddam inside of his house with the shades pulled. Now we've invested a bunch of money up front to open the house up. Now we know what's going on, and we'll have a different deal. And then that investment, but in the future, we won't have to pay all that money out, and that's good.
Yeah, that'll be when we get the peace dividend, won't it?
Absolutely.
Bill Dunkelberg, thank you very much. Good job today, as always, and we'll see you next month.
All righty, I'll be here.
Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, William Dunkelberg with the NFIB. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.